Thanks for listening to the Best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
We're taking your calls. Off the top here, I want to talk about the fact that there was a police. I don't know if you guys saw this. There was a line of police officers that was run over last night in Buffalo during the middle of the protest. And this is why I say that as emotion gets ratcheted up, danger grows for people both who are protesters and also police and National Guardsmen. So far, despite the fact that we've had basically a week of protests that have often descended in different places into riots and looting, the one positive has been there has not been very much loss of life. But when I saw that video last night of police officers getting overrun, and there are countless videos of police and protesters and looters and rioters all having to interact in highly charged emotional circumstances, the one positive is loss of life has been very low in this entire week's worth of protest. And we don't talk about it a lot, but I think you have to give a lot of credit to police and National Guardsmen all over the country who are in cities where police haven't been accused of wrongdoing at all of a substantial fashion. And suddenly they're being pelted with rocks. They're being assaulted with Molotov cocktails. I saw a story I couldn't believe. Two lawyers in New York were arrested for throwing a Molotov cocktail into a police officer's car. I was like, I can't believe the world that we are living in. And the reason why I'm trying to focus on facts and data is because emotions often lead us to make poor choices, even if we've got the best interest in our heart. And let me give you a statistic that I'm looking at right now. This article is actually in, I went downstairs this morning and got the Wall Street Journal, and this is the article that I was referring to. This is in today's Wall Street Journal talking about, the headline is Good Policing Saves Black Lives. And I will say this, and this is important. We focus a lot on negative outcomes, but it's easier to see bad than it is to see good. I gave you an important lesson to me to start the show. We're all entitled to our own opinions, but we aren't all entitled to our own facts. I want you to also realize that it's easier to see bad news than it is to see good news. Good news occurs far more frequently than bad news, which is why it's not typically news. One of the challenges in the wake of protests is that there are often major consequences of protests that can actually lead to more difficult outcomes in the cities where protesting occurred. And this is what the article is about in the Wall Street Journal today. There was a study that was done by Roland Fryer, who is a Harvard professor, I believe. And he released a study looking into police use of deadly force. And I'm reading directly from the Wall Street Journal, this Harvard study. To the surprise of the author, as well as many in the media and on the left who take racist law enforcement as a given, this Harvard study found no evidence of bias in police shootings. His conclusions have since been echoed by researchers at the University of Maryland and Michigan State University, who wrote in a paper last year, quote, "We didn't find any evidence for anti-Black or anti-Hispanic disparity in police use of force across all shootings, and if anything, found anti-white disparities when controlling for race-specific crime." Mr. Fryer, who is again in this Harvard study, said that what he has also noticed is that after surveying more than two dozen federal and state probes of police departments, when police are investigated following incidents of deadly force that go viral, police activity, again, I'm reading from the Wall Street Journal this morning, police activity declined and violent crime spiked. This is the so-called Ferguson effect, when police are investigated for Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, it happened in Chicago. It also happened in Baltimore. When police are investigated, what they do is they pull back aggressive policing and murder rates skyrocket in those cities. What he said, and this is a quote, homicide goes up considerably following viral incidents. Total crime goes up. What happens, according to this author, is that police pull back. They don't stop doing their jobs, but they become less proactive and curb their interactions with civilians. And so in Chicago, after viral protests, there was a 90% drop in police-civilian contact immediately after the investigation began. Baltimore, in the wake of the Freddie Gray situation, literally went to zero, he said, and homicides increased substantially. So what happened was, when police are investigated for viral incidents, they stop policing as aggressively, which leads to more death and more crime. So what I'm getting to here is, emotion often makes people feel better, but it can lead to less results. And what happens is, eventually, all of the media attention on protest goes away, right? It goes away. And when it goes away, the media attention isn't there when murder rates skyrocket or when crime increases, because all the police who are doing good work are not able to do their good work anymore because of a police officer that did bad work. Now, look, if I could wave a magic wand, we would get rid of all racism in this country. We would get rid of all racist police. We would get rid of all people in their professions who do bad jobs, but we don't have that magic wand. What we have is the criminal justice system. And what we do with the criminal justice system is, regardless of what your job is or what your background is, when you behave in a criminal manner, hopefully you're going to get charged with a crime and you're going to have to pay the consequences for that behavior, as should happen in the event a jury determines, as seems likely, that George Floyd was murdered and the officer who is responsible for it should have to go to jail. But that's for a jury to determine. That's how our criminal justice system works. All right, we got a lot of people who want to weigh in. Again, I'm reading from the Wall Street Journal there. I'll tweet out the link to that article if you guys want to read it yourself. 877-996-6369. This is OutKick, and who's up next, Dub?
All right, we got Jim in Cincinnati.
Jim, what you got for me?
To the best in the business. Hey, I just want to comment on some good things.
Yeah.
That cop in Flint, Michigan, took his gear off and walked with the...
That was fantastic. That's a positive. That's a positive viral story of police trying to show that they understand, they're listening, and they care about the concerns of the people they are there to protect and serve.
And they took the pictures of the one thing. I don't mind the protests. I'm in Cincinnati. It's real calm here. They're protesting at night. They're not being. You always got the guy, or always got the people that loot. They'll do it in tornadoes. So they take advantage of the situation. They're destructive. Those are criminals, not protesters.
Yeah.
And but I do like the thing in Flint, Michigan. I love that.
Thanks for the call. I appreciate you sharing good news, because there is good news out there too. What I find is that good news spreads a lot less virally by and large than bad news does. I wish good news spread as rapidly and as quickly as bad news does, but it seems to me that social media is a conduit very often for negativity into our heart as opposed to positivity. Who's up next?
We got Damian in Houston.
What's up, Damian?
Hey, what's up, Clay? I just want to say shout out to the Maryland militia, Clay. I debate with Ben about this. I'm a black man. I'm in Houston. Shout out to the sheriff of Houston for walking with the people, listening. That's the one thing a lot of people are not doing. They're not listening to the situation. Okay, you throw stats out about how many people killed versus race or whatever, and I Googled that. I Googled unarmed white man killed by police, and the only thing that comes up is black killings. And
okay, hold
one,
on.
The one
lady- hold on. That's an interesting point. You're right, and I don't know why that is. I read an article that if you try to go look up unarmed white people who are shot and killed by police, that instead you get articles about unarmed black people shot and killed by police. I don't know why that is. I don't know why Google is not giving you the data. There is a guy, somebody can tweet me his name. I shared the link. On video in Dallas, there is a white kid who is killed almost identically to the way that George Floyd was killed. On video, the police weren't charged with a crime. They did not have even lose their jobs. And all of it's on video. They're basically putting a chokehold on, much like happened with George Floyd, and nobody paid attention to it. I'm glad you called in, Damien. Let me ask you this question. What's the reaction if George Floyd is, instead of being a black guy, it is a he's a white guy? Do you think you would have heard about the George Floyd question? Everything else is the exact same. Same officer in question, and the exact same scenario plays out, but it's a white guy. Because we know the data is accurate, right? Unless you think the Washington Post data is accurate. In the 2019, 41 unarmed people killed, 19 of them white, 9 of them black, 6 of them of Hispanic descent, also Asian, Native American. They're also all worked in there. 41 total. So we know the numbers, the raw numbers, but you're right that it's almost always exclusively when we see these stories, white cop, black victim. But I'm saying...
Now, we did have the white lady that made
that's
the
news
a week.
But that's true. But there was no, to my knowledge, there was no rioting that came out of her murder. Because they convicted that officer, a black cop, if you're not familiar, in Minneapolis, shot a white woman. I think she was Australian. I don't even think she was from America. She was living in Minneapolis area at the time. And he was charged with a crime and he was convicted. The police officer happened to be black. I don't think that race played a role there. But the point is, the charges happened.
About white people getting harassed by police, and when I see it, and I'm a black man, and most of black America thinks this, is now you know what a black man feels like. And this is a lot of stimulation. Until you experience it, you will not know about it.
And I understand. I'm happy to listen to your feelings about it, but instead of trying to pretend that I know what that feels like, I go to the data, right? And this is what oftentimes gets my wife upset. Are you married? You got a girl?
I got a wife, and believe me, she's from Mississippi.
All right, you got a wife from Mississippi. So let's talk about being husbands. How often do you argue with your wife?
Every day.
All right. Join the club. All right. We are now on common territory here. White and black man, Hispanic man and Asian man, regardless of what your background is right now, we are all on the same page, right? How often does your wife in that argument say, "I don't like your tone"?
Almost every time.
Almost every man who has ever been married or had a girlfriend, all right? You have never been in an argument where your wife, her go-to line, her number one line, it doesn't matter what you say, it is, "I don't like your tone. Why are you yelling right now? Why are you talking in this way?" And what does that a lot of times make you? It makes you madder because she's like, you're like, "I'm not yelling. I'm not." And then your tone actually goes up because you're like, "What?" Like, you're not even listening to what I'm saying. You're talking about the way that I'm saying it, which is making me even angrier. I don't know what they teach wives. I don't know what boot camp that women go to where they drill into their mind. The very first thing you say anytime you get into an argument with a man is, "I don't like your tone right now." And I bet if you're a man and you're listening to me right now, you almost never say to your wife, "I don't like your tone right now. I don't like the way that," right? Okay, so let's start there. And then how often, if that conversation gets accelerated, I'll tell you my life. So what I try to do is I'm like Dr. Spock from Star Trek, right? Like I try to not match the anger or the intensity, because maybe I'm wrong, but it seems to me that women can get angrier and more intense, at least in my life, a lot faster than I can. Like, I think everything's going pretty well. And the next thing you know, like, the steam is coming off the head. And by the way, it ain't just me. Happens with the kids and everybody else, right? And so what I try to do is I try to step back and I try to logically talk about it. I don't know that it works, But what I find that it does is it dials down the intensity of the experience. Because your wife is going to say, well, you know, she's coming from a female perspective. And as hard as I might work to understand what it's like to be a woman, I'm never going to be able to know 100% what it's like to be a woman because I've never done it. And so you're calling in and you're a black guy and you're saying, hey, this is my experience. I'm never going to know 100% what it's like to be you, and you're never going to know what it's 100% like to be me, which is why I say I'm trying to just get a common floor of facts, and then we can discuss on top of the common floor of facts what the outcome is. You're in Houston, and so I think you had a good response, you said, with the police officer there. Is that right?
Yeah, once they started kind of looting, it's like the protesters got on them, and the police chief came and started walking with the protesters,
yeah.
And he shows solidarity. That's the thing, is that we point them out. Them protesters, they point them out. I don't protest. I believe life goes on. You know, you gotta have some type of idea in this. You gotta, you know, level head.
That's right.
Because
but you would agree with me. So a lot of times, my thing is, and I see a connection here between the coronavirus and the riots that have come out of the protest. When people respond emotionally, they oftentimes make decisions that lead to worse results. And look, I understand. The older you get, I think the more rational you can become because you're not as emotional. I'm less emotional now at 41 than I was at 17, than I was at 24. So I understand the idea of being a young guy. How old are you now?
I'm almost 40.
You're almost 40. How much dumber were you when you were 15 years old?
Oh, man, you don't even want to talk about it, man.
Right.
That's just, you know, being young, you do dumb things.
All the
time,
right? But you thought, when you and I were 15 years old, what did we think? We are the smartest people on the planet. The crazy thing about being young and dumb is you are so young and dumb, you have no idea how young and dumb you are. So when I see protests, I think that you remember this too. When you're 15 and 16 years old, you can go to something with really good intentions. Hey, I want to make the world a better place. And then you see somebody doing something dumb, which is looting, and you think, oh, you know what? I want to run in and go get something too. You follow whatever. A lot of times when you're young, you're a follower, and you follow whatever you see around you. And so that is an emotional response. Like your initial intentions can be good, and they can turn bad. So it doesn't surprise me that a lot of kids, regardless of their race, would go out and be like, hey, I'm going to protest. Things are going to get better. And then all of a sudden, the Nike store gets raided. You're walking by, and you're like, man, that jersey in there, like I could just walk right in there and get it. I'll give you an example. When I was 15, I went out to dinner with a bunch of guys on a went to breakfast with a bunch of guys on one of our sports teams. Maybe 16, you know, and we were all eating together. And then a couple of guys walked out. We're at the Shoney's breakfast buffet. A couple of guys walked out without paying. And then everybody's like, hey, we should all just walk out without paying. That's stupid, right? Like everybody out there is like, why would you walk out of Shoney's? Like everybody knows you were eating there. You know, there's 15 guys on a team that are all sitting there eating, and a couple of people decide to walk out without paying, and then everybody else follows them out. And then we got caught. Everybody had to come pay. It didn't turn into a story, right? But there's, you know, 15 or 20 kids who were otherwise smart, good kids that make a dumb decision, and everybody else kind of follows. And so that all of this ties in together. I guess what I'm getting to is that's why I start with facts here, and I think facts are important. Does that make sense to you? And I'm not going to know how you feel, and you're not going to know how I feel, but we have to start with some kind of common understanding.
Good talk, Clay. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate the call. Look, I mean, the other thing is find something that you agree on. My theory, and this used to be commonplace, is we all have a lot more in common than we do different. Some of our opinions may be different, but if you think about it, we can quickly connect on a common ground. Really, all of us, even with the person who may seem the most different to you. Was it Damian in Houston? I bet Damian in Houston and I could sit down and watch a sporting event and have a really good time together. We may have totally different opinions on what the government should do on a day-to-day basis, but if we sat down and we watch the Rockets play a game in Houston, I think we'd probably have a pretty good time. If we sat down and watched the Texans and the Titans play, might not have as good of a time in the event that he's a Texans fan and I'm a Titans fan, but still would probably have a lot more fun than normal work day, even if you're sitting down watching a game with somebody of a different fan base than yours. Let me try to get a bunch more of your calls here, because I told everybody that that we were going to get to him, and then we're going to get to John Morosi. In fact, see if John Morosi could join us a little bit later, Danny G, if you would, because I hate to leave. I know we have a lot of people who wait a long time, and I said we were going to take calls for a couple days. So let me try to get through all of the callers right now, because I appreciate you guys waiting. Who's up next, Dub?
We got Preston Boise.
Preston, what you got for me?
Hey, great show, Clay. Awesome. Appreciate the facts. Started listening for
All right, we got to drop him. Appreciate the praise for the show, but when you lose your train of thought and then curse live on the radio, as good as your train of thought might have been before that, that's not good. Dub. It's rare that we have a guy come on, say he loves the show, then he loses his train of thought and then curses.
Yeah, that was the first time I've experienced that so far.
that was a hell of a roller coaster ride there. Preston.
Let's see if Josh in Tennessee can
hopefully
do
Josh in Tennessee
better.
Can do a little bit better. I got to be. How many more people do we have to get to here? By the way,
after Josh, we'll have three more.
All right, let's be fast because I got to get to break. So I'm not. I don't have time to have a long conversation. But what you got for me, Josh?
I was a recruiter in 2005 through 2006, which was known as the surge for the U.S. Army.
Yes.
So I totally agree with what you're saying about percentages of being killed and everything like that. The argument that we used to make was you're more likely stepping off the curb and getting killed by a car driving by in a parking lot than you are of getting killed in Iraq or Afghanistan during action. I had a discussion last night with my kids who are teenagers, asking them, what is the benefit of the riots? Not the protests, but the riots. What is coming up soon? Granted, I know that's getting into opinion. That's not something we want to talk about, but just food for thought. There's a lot of different sides you can look at it.
Yeah,
I love the show, and I wish in this state, since I drove from one area probably past where you live all the way into Nashville, that the local radios would carry you guys constantly because they only carry your first hour, and it really drives me nuts.
I appreciate that. Yeah, we're on right now the first hour only in Nashville, 5 to 6. You can always download the podcast as millions of you literally are doing every month.
I say we go do a march to get all 3 hours on.
Look, I think most people support anybody's right to protest. I think immediately the step beyond protesting to violence or looting or attacking other people, I mean, that's a bridge too far really rapidly, right? I'm a First Amendment absolutist. You have a right to share any opinion. You don't have a right to behave in a violent manner. I think almost everybody would agree that that is the line of what's appropriate and inappropriate. Who's up next?
Chris in California.
Chris, what you got for me?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call, Clay. I'm white. I avoid Twitter, Fox, MSNBC for the emotional tone that you suggested, so I appreciate a fact-based discussion. To that extent, I just wanted to share a book, Talking to Strangers, by Malcolm Gladwell. In it, he talks about the breakdown of communication that affects different aspects of our lives. And there's one incident in there with a woman. Just for something to give some context, as I look at all of this discussion that's been going on and all the, what's been happening, it seems like what you're kind of suggesting is that blacks don't have it as bad as they think as it deals with police interactions. And based upon, the discussions and interactions I've had in the readings, I don't believe that. I would feel very uncomfortable in the situation dealing with running with a police officer.
No. Let me take a step back. I'm not saying I presume to know how anyone feels, right? I'm not even trying to know how anyone feels because I think it's impossible for me to know how you individually, regardless of what your background is out there, feel on a day-to-day basis. You are entitled to feel as you see fit. Expecting me to suddenly like jump into your body and suddenly know how you feel is, I believe, an impossibility. What I'm saying is, I want to get all of us can look at a common set of facts, and then what I would ask you to do is use those common set of facts to impact the way you think about an issue, whether you're black, white, Asian, or Hispanic. We all are entitled to our own opinions, and a feeling is an opinion, right? It's a feeling that is based on the way that you feel. It's an opinion inside of you. We're all entitled to our own opinions, but we aren't all entitled to our own facts. And I think we spend far too little time looking at facts and far too many times in much of media focused on feelings. There's nothing wrong with feelings, but, you know, what's the song? The old, is it Bette Midler song? The old feeling song? Who sings that? Anybody know? Is it Bette Midler? Did I just drop that out of nowhere? Somebody look up feelings and tell me who sings that song. And maybe we can use it coming back from the next break. But I'm trying to focus on the facts right now. Who's up next?
Charlie in Nashville.
Charlie, what you got for me?
Hey, thank you for taking my call. Man, you talked for the first 30 minutes, and none of it was about sports, and all of it was interesting. And I kind of finished your sentence. You said, the reason I think our show is getting better and more people are listening to it, and I said, because you give the facts. And
yeah.
You said, because I give the truth. Or maybe it's vice versa. But it's facts and the truth is the same thing to me. And you kind of follow the Colin Cowherd, you know, deal of I'm in the interesting business.
Yeah.
And you make things interesting. You don't have much downtime. You know, Dan Patrick, I like him, but he's got a lot of, you know, talking like me. There's a lot of dead air there. So love your show. And I echo what the other guy said. They need to put y'all on 3 hours a day up here in Nashville because I have to call in to listen to the second hour.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you. 877-996-6369, by the way, is our phone number, although we're not going to get any more calls, so I don't know why I just gave it. I do appreciate all the positive feedback from you guys. I really do. It makes a big difference. All right, Dub, what do we got next?
Last one, Walkin' Willie.
Walkin' Willie. What are we, 8 days till you'll be 80? Did we lose Walkin' Willie?
Willie, there. I guess we lost him.
Oh, man. I hope he did. I hope we didn't lose him 8 days before he turns 80. It's right. June 10th is his birthday, right? Walking Willie down in New Orleans. He calls in a lot.
Yeah, that's his birthday. And I got his address from him last time he called, so we can send him something.
Yeah, we're going to send him some stuff for his 80th birthday. But we lost Walking Willie. People love Walking Willie. I appreciate all of you. All right, we're going to talk to Morosi, you said, Danny G, at the bottom of the hour.
Yeah, he's good for 40 after. And by the way, quick search on the song Feelings from 1976, Shirley Bassey.
Did Bette Midler actually sing?
I remember her doing some lame Beaches song when we were kids.
I mean, in all honesty, is she a singer or did I just make up the fact that she might have sung Feelings?
She is a singer and actress, so maybe she covered that song. I think it's one of those songs where there's several different versions of it.
Yeah. So do we have that in the Fox Sports Radio database?
Let's hope not, but I could
play
it.
She did Wind Beneath My Wings.
There you go.
Bette Midler sang that.
Yeah.
Okay, so I didn't just totally make up the Bette Midler. Is Bette Midler still alive?
I believe she is. Yeah. I think she's very outspoken on Twitter, too.
Yeah.
She probably hates me.
I think you
probably,
made up the fact. You did make up the fact she sang Feelings, though. That's not the song from her.
Well, I'm going to apologize. I had an opinion that Bette Midler sang Feelings, and I apologized to everyone for getting that wrong. When I get something wrong, I try a fact wrong. I try to let you know. What if Bette Midler? I mean, she may hate me. Now she hates me even more. All right. Well, hopefully we'll have Feelings to play for when you come back. By the way, good calls. I appreciate all of you weighing in. Wanted to open up the phones and give you guys an opportunity to share your thoughts. And I will continue. When we come back, we're going to dive into that question. We haven't talked a lot of significant sports so far because, frankly, there's not a lot of significant sports going on right now. But one thing that would help is if baseball comes back, what is the absolute latest as the players, owners, continue to go back and forth with different proposals. We're going to talk to John Morosi about that. We'll set the table for it next.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Is my mic on? Can anybody hear me? Can you believe this was a hit?
Wow.
I mean, it was like, man, you know what I want to do? I want to pop on Feelings.
Now I know why my mom was so cheesy at times growing up, because if this was her jam in 1976.
I mean, people were like, man, the music is perfected with Feelings. Let me go ahead and get Eddie Garcia, get the latest on the world of sports, as it were.
NFL news, Las Vegas Raiders say they are aware of a report that this year's number one draft pick, wide receiver Henry Ruggs III out of Alabama, suffered an off-field injury. He claims it was helping a friend move. He was seen on crutches. College football, Clemson wide receiver Justin Ross will miss the entire 2020 season because of a neck injury. Head coach Dabo Swinney says there is no guarantee Ross will ever play football again after this spine issue was discovered in an x-ray that was taken in March. And former Auburn football head coach Pat Dye has passed away at the age of 80. He was hospitalized in May for kidney-related issues, later tested positive for the coronavirus. Now back to Clay Travis and the Geico Outkick the Coverage studios.
Phenomenal legacy if you are a college football fan. Tough news for Justin Ross as well with that that news that came out. And Henry Ruggs, what did you say? He's on crutches after an injury in moving?
That's the story. I don't know if it's true or not, but the story is, yeah, he did. He claims he was helping a friend move.
His dad said that his leg got pinned between something like a piece of furniture in the moving truck.
I mean, what about, like, this is just further evidence of why moving is the worst thing on the planet.
Amen.
But Henry Ruggs should be like, dude, I'm rich now. Pay for movers, bro. like, especially if it wasn't even his stuff. Like, even Henry Ruggs is getting rolled in to try to, like, help people move. There's nothing worse than one friend. I think they did a whole Seinfeld episode about this. Like, one friend asking another friend to help him move. That's just awful. Have I talked long enough here for the segment to count yet? So we
yes.
can go to John Morosi?
Yeah.
All right. When we come back, John Morosi is going to join us.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Is my mic on? That was a mix-up. That wasn't me cursing. That was a caller who forgot what he was going to say. I was ready to react to Feelings, which we were playing on the show. Appreciate all of you. Joined now by John Morosi. John, are we going to ever get baseball?
Clay, good morning.
Yes.
Yes. I still believe that we will. The hour is getting a little late. It is not yet the 11th hour or midnight in terms of those negotiations, but this is a critical week for the game. I know I've said that before, but this one is as well. And the fact that MLB reportedly was willing to go to a fully paid from a prorated standpoint in terms of the agreement back from March, this aspect of it, fully prorated at 50 games, and the players would like fully prorated at 114 games, there likely is some middle point, maybe even 82, which would be halfway between, where there are some elements where there could be an agreement there halfway, maybe with some reduction in salary. We will see. But I think in general, Clay, while at times the process has appeared to be contentious, I really believe that ultimately we're going to have a season.
What is the deadline here? So do you think we'll ultimately end up at 82? Because the owners are now at 50. The players are at whatever, 110, I think was the most recent proposal they put out, or in that neighborhood. The midway point between those two most recent proposals is the 82, I believe, which is where we started this entire process a month ago, it feels like. What's the drop-dead deadline so far? As you know, we're sitting here, I believe, on June 2nd, and how soon does something get resolved here?
Well, right now, Clay, there is not a drop-dead deadline set. I think especially if the 50-game scenario becomes possible, that you could get in August, September if you had to. So
right.
I think from that perspective, you can wait and take this much deeper even into July if you had to from a standpoint of negotiation. So I don't think that we're at all at a spot where there has been a deadline set. The union's most recent proposal was not at all a desperate one from a standpoint of their need to get a deal done quickly. So while I had thought at one point in time that June 1 would be a soft deadline, clearly that's not the case. Clearly they're still talking, and we're now into June. And so I don't believe that there is a firm deadline this week or even next week. There may be options that start to fall away the deeper that you get in terms of being able to play, for example, 114 games. MLB remains, I think, justifiably concerned about going too far into the fall because of concerns of a second spike, according to some public health experts. So I think in general, there is a desire on the part of MLB to hit the window of games as much as possible, and that's why I think you're still going to see the league be very reluctant to play games deep into the month of November.
Do you think that there's a possibility now? I know we talked about this before. NASCAR is discussing potentially allowing fans to come back. In the state of Texas, the governor has said 25% occupancy. Let's say that baseball is playing in Texas. Do you think there could be fans at baseball games if they got this worked out?
Great question. I don't know that answer yet, Clay, in terms of what the proposal would say regarding if there are different rules in different states regarding that possibility. I would say this, that, and maybe you would have to sit the fans up at a higher level because players are rightly concerned about close contact with the public and making sure that they're around those who are not transmitting the virus in a safe fashion. So I think that aspect of it, where the union would likely have a tremendous amount of say-so and clout in determining if that would be safe and if that would be something that they'd be comfortable with, depending on the municipality. But to your point, Clay, the situation could be different in terms of infection rates and local laws at various spots around the country. So it's a great question. I don't think that it's been specifically addressed in the proposals to date, and I do think it's going to be one of the major questions that faces the league and, in fact, all leagues. Do you wait until in all or a majority of states the regulations would permit crowds to allow any crowds back, or do you allow individual teams the discretion in accordance with local laws to make that choice? It's a great question, and I would say to you, Clay, that it does not appear to me that the league and the players have gotten far enough down the field that specific question has been addressed.
The reason why I bring it up is obviously revenue and the amount of revenue you can create is a huge part of this story, and most of the talk has been, oh, there's no way we're going to have fans at all. If NASCAR is going to bring fans back this month in Florida, and if in the state of Texas they are going to allow 25% occupancy, I mean, a lot of Major League Baseball games, particularly early in the season, are not, in fact, packed. You know, there's a lot of games, hello, Miami Marlins, where, you know, a 25% or Tampa Bay Rays, where a 25% occupancy might even be high compared to the average gate. And so I wonder whether there's a possibility for crowd revenue here that now is becoming possible if you look ahead and think about July 4th. That's the last question for you. That would obviously be something that would militate even more in favor. Quickly here, if you were on a scale of 1 to 10, how optimistic are you that we will have baseball in July?
I still am at an 8. Okay. I really am. And the last point I'll mention on the thing you just raised, Clay, is there is certainly a cost that is associated with having concession stands, having the fans in the stands. There's a cost there to just facilitate that amount of people, and there's also certainly a risk of reinfection or additional infection, rather, that could create maybe a suspension of play in the league that the league may not want to necessarily have that risk occurring there in the future.
We appreciate you, my man. We'll talk to you again soon. Thanks for getting up early with us. That's John Morosi. Go follow him on Twitter.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Petros Papadakis with us now, as he is every single Tuesday. Petros been fired up trying to share facts with the public out there. Man, we hardly have any time. Do you want to come on tomorrow? Should we go ahead and knock you out for a short visit today, and then we can have you on tomorrow too?
Whatever you want, Clay. I'm glad that I've been sitting here all morning staring at porn. I'm just kidding, not porn.
It sounds like a good way to start the day, honestly, if you were.
I mean, no one's up, and I'm sitting alone, and you bump me, so
This is we'll have you on. Here's what we're going to do.
You wouldn't do that to Dabo, though. I'll tell you that right now. Or you wouldn't do that to Tulsi.
To Tulsi Gabbard? here's the deal. When we finish with you on the show right now, we're going to immediately continue with you, and you will have a full visit, and you won't have to wake up early tomorrow.
I'll get up. Just relax.
No, this is perfect.
The news changes every 10 freaking minutes. I will get up and come on tomorrow. Now, What do you want to talk about today?
Are you optimistic about baseball being back? I like to always lead with a question requiring optimism from you to start off your morning.
You know, I was more optimistic just because the other option is unthinkable, right? It's unthinkable that they wouldn't be able to figure this out and be able to get baseball to people when they need it badly. And clearly they're not arguing about the health. If it was a health argument, there would be a lot different rhetoric coming out of all the leakage. And that is their problem. There's a lot of leakage, and this kind of stuff turns people off when there's not a pandemic or a bunch of social unrest. There is. And people are really turned off listening to baseball players and owners going back and forth, especially in social media or through their proxies in the media. And I think they got to get it done. Like, the alternative is crippling for baseball. But yesterday, Matt and I had Nomar Garciaparra on, and he was very honest, and he's been involved in a lot of negotiations. And he said, and he owns part of the LA soccer team who's involved almost in a lockout, I think. And he said, hey, when there's money involved, it's 50-50. You know, you never know what's going to happen. And that kind of sent a shock through me, because here we are in June, and we thought teams would be playing in early June. You know, and we don't even have, maybe by Thursday the NBA is supposed to vote and come up with something solid. But, you know, we're in our third month of this or whatever, and there's still nothing solid from the big sports. So yesterday, Nomar shook me a little bit.
Yeah, you know, last question for you, and we'll talk about this some tomorrow because we got to be quick here, but I'm actually curious on your perspective. This is a lot more serious than whether baseball will be back. How does the situation in L.A. right now compare in your mind to what you saw when you were a kid? And it's obviously hard to kind of compare to what when you were a kid with the riot situation.
It feels almost the same, other than social media and the fact that, you know, I go on the radio.
Right.
The conversations that we had back then were locker room conversation.
Right.
You know, the stuff you see on social media was the stuff I'd hear from my teammates and people I knew, or employees at my dad's restaurant or whatever. Black-owned business signs, burning and looting, other people who are well-meaning. Rodney King saying, can't we all just get along? A lot like Floyd's brother.
That's right.
Calling for peace. I guess the social media makes it more widespread, and you have these horizontally organized groups. You know, anarchist groups are nothing new. I mean, if you've ever been to Europe, I mean, they exist. That's what they do. I'm not sure we had that during the LA riots, but it feels really similar. But the LA riots, like, you could look out and see the city on fire.
Right.
And that is not the case here. I mean, the media and the cops cracked down pretty hard last night and started really snatching people up. But it feels very similar, to be honest. And I felt like we had more honest conversations about it back then, because we were talking like straight to each other most of the time, as opposed to on a phone or a computer.
You know, that's actually a really, really interesting thing that I want to build on with you tomorrow is social media dividing us more than it's bringing us together? It is a really interesting conversation, because face-to-face conversation, I think, is oftentimes much more valuable. Petros Papadakis at The Old P, AM 570 LA Sports. We'll talk to him again tomorrow. This is Outkick. Appreciate all of you hanging out with us. Download the podcast. Appreciate the calls and the conversation. This is Outkick on Fox Sports Radio.